Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to AquarianRadio.com.
AquarianRadio.com.
Aloha. This is Enki. You know me as Aquarius, and this is our age, the Satayuga. Time to celebrate with us. We have programs on all chakra tantra, love styles and relationship choices, counseling strategies and techniques that you can use at home. We have extraterrestrial radio where we deal with alienology, paranormal people, and we have an experiencers network. We have a section called Ancient Aliens, and the programs therein are Enki Speaks, Nimma, the Mother of Humanity, has her program, and we revise ancient anthropology. And most important of all, we have peace paradigms, because this is the age of peace. Harmony and understanding, sympathy and trust abounding. No more falsehoods or derisions. Golden living dreams of visions, mystic crystal revelations, and the mind's true liberation.
On this show, we teach you how to listen lovingly, how to heal each other's hurts.
Center yourself and benefit from interdependency.
Review the chapters of your life and find your divine purpose.
Call 646-649-0893 or chat online and we'll answer your questions and counsel you.
Here are your hosts, Dr. Sasha and Janet Lesson.
Aloha, and welcome everybody to Aquarian Radio at AquarianRadio.com. I am your host, Janet Kirillis, and your co-host, Dr. Sasha. Today is an episode of Counseling Lessons, and our focus is on Casey Jones, the memoir of an awful personality. I'll read a little bit from her biography. Casey says, God gave me the precious gift of being a multiple personality. During a childhood field, great suffering. I ran away and became a flight attendant with United Airlines. My father's death on February 19th triggered a suicide. I lost almost an entire decade of therapy, able to work. My diagnosis of multiple personality disorder, now known as dissociative identity disorder, or DID. Research indicates that it's an extremely rare disorder. Few of us survive into adulthood, and our suicide rate is the highest of all mental illness. We are too fractured to process the enormous betrayal and maltreatment. The abuse literally scars the child by damaging both the structure and chemistry of their developing brain. I had earned a BA at Eastern New Mexico University. My graduate work in psychology in German was done at Ruhr University in Germany and University in Denver, Colorado. Consciously, I was trying desperately to understand my behavior. Learning another language and piano lessons both played a key role in rewiring my withering brain. My abusers were white and African American. Evil comes in all colors. I sincerely believe that we should focus and not the color of their skin. Predators often use their race to elicit sympathy or a false sense of camaraderie with their victims. My encounter with Dr. Jeffrey Bell was a costly one. I've been impersonating an MD and PhD for 30 years. Due to my ongoing efforts, the California Medical Board has denied any opportunity to work in any area of medicine. Jeff has also been fired from numerous hospitals, offices, and universities because his credentials are fraudulent. While writing my book, I screamed for 2 years, reliving the horror. During this process, several friends asked me why was I doing it. They hated seeing me go to spot. At first, I couldn't answer them. I didn't know why, but one afternoon, it hit me like a brick in the face. I can't be silent. There's nothing. I am certain that these predators and con men are counting on just that. They know that most of the victims shame or fear retaliation mission to these human parasites to continue in their vicious destruction. Other human beings and the murder of souls. Casey's new book is and the angels rocked me, and before being her.
Just to welcome you, reading your experiences, thank you so much, and I'd really like you to share. If there's anything you can say to help other people.
Okay.
You're breaking up. Go ahead.
Okay, we're having a little bit of technical difficulties here, listeners, so please bear with us. You may have to repeat questions. Casey, just come on board and speak and tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me on. I'm 61 years old. It's taken me almost an entire lifetime to deal with my issues from childhood. I had 13 years at least of rape and torture on a ranch in New Mexico, and I believe that my 10 years of therapy, almost 10 years, and writing the book probably were the most healing things which I could have done. So I'm here happy and very glad to be speaking to you today.
Well, thank you. We're very glad to have you on the show today. So, you want to say something?
Let me see if I understand. First of all, there's the trauma. Then, second of all, there's some kind of betrayal by a therapist who is shushing you up. Am I getting you right?
No. There is the childhood trauma. And then in my 50s, I married a doctor, but it turns out that he was really a con man.
Oh.
Wow. So let's, I guess, back up a little bit, and we'll start with, can you tell us a little bit about what was going on in your childhood and environment that was creating this situation for you? With the 13 years of rape and the trauma.
All right, I'd be happy to do that. My father was a rancher. He was having affairs, and my mother was actually his seventh marriage. This created an enormous amount of anger from my mother, and she spewed out that rage at me, because I was my father's favorite. My older brother, who was 4 years older, almost 5 years, was a sexual sadist. He also had 90 recorded arrests before he graduated high school. My parents never held him accountable for his crimes, and they actually paid off 3 teenage girls claiming rape. My mother's anger at me actually helped fuel my brother's rage, and he raped and tortured me, oral, anal, and gang rapes with his brothers and friends. So I fractured from the huge betrayal, and I disassociated. And when I did that, I, in spirit, floated to the ceiling of the bedroom or the barn or wherever the rape was occurring, and an angel rocked me and comforted me.
Wow.
I ran away and became a flight attendant with United Airlines.
So you got a job at United Airlines, and that worked for a while, got you away from the situation. How old were you when you got your job with United Airlines?
I was about to turn 20, and they hired at age 20. So by the time I graduated from the flight attendant school, just a month or two later, I was 20 years old.
That's great. And how long were you able to work as a flight attendant before you had before your father died? How long were you working as a flight attendant?
I worked for them for 19 years. And
the
symbology of that is that I was running from my past.
So tell us more about that.
Well, I flew, international, and I also flew domestic. I was trained in Chicago, and I was then first based in Newark, New Jersey. So I really believe that as a multiple, we lose a lot of time, and I would wake up in cities and not know where I was, but that was fairly normal with all the jet lag that a normal flight attendant experiences. So it was really difficult for me to realize how mentally ill I was, because I thought I was simply massively fatigued.
Okay. So then you said something when your father happened. And this happened to me. I was similar to that, although in my own way, I'm probably bad.
Have you recovered during those days?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand the question. Can you repeat that?
Say it again.
When you have missing time, have you been able to go back and remember now your centered person, what happened during those times?
No, I've never recovered those. I've also have major lapses in my childhood memory, which is normal for a multiple.
So let's start, I guess, by explaining to our listeners what is a multiple, what is MPD, or dissociative identity disorder?
Well, according to the diagnostic manual, which most therapists go by, it indicates that there are two or more separate personalities and that they recurrently take control of the host behavior. So Casey is the host. That is my primary personality. Also, there are major lapses in memory too extensive to be explained by ordinary forgetfulness, and that the alternate personalities cannot be explained away by, for instance, substance abuse or a medical condition such as seizures.
Your connection's really bad. I wonder if you might you have two ways of calling in. Maybe you can try the second method of calling in. Better.
This is fascinating. I've had dozens of cases. Other people say almost identical scenarios to what yours. Their moment of terrible abuse, being able to associate, and ultimately when they integrated that. Two, it's not this spiritual situation.
Well, I'm not catching your entire question. Could you repeat it for me, please?
Okay. So what I was wondering if you could maybe hang up back in on we might have a better connection. Not sure why it's so garbled. I can, but I guess when we're talking to each other, it's pretty.
Sure.
It might be fine on the radio show, so we can try to live with you.
So you would like me to hang up and call back on the other line?
What do you think, Josh? Should we just keep going?
Well, okay, I'll try to talk louder. Maybe that will help. The idea is that my question is, when you dissociated, when you floated your consciousness out, was a part of you born that later gave you something special, a spiritual boost, an ability?
Okay.
Yeah, I'm only caught about a third of that.
Okay, so we'll go with the questions that sent me, so we can kind of. The first question is, what is MPD, or dissociative identity disorder? Explain that to our listeners.
Well, do you want me to explain again what I did discuss from the diagnostic manual?
Yeah, I lost track of where we were. Anyway, so what what tends to cause the dissociative identity disorder?
What is are the causes? Well, it's usually an early onset of life-threatening situations before the age of 7. And that there is a high frequency, meaning that there is little time in between for the child to recover. There's also an inability to escape. For instance, I often ran away, but when I did, my parents would catch me and then beat me unmercifully. The level of betrayal is extremely high, meaning that a close family member is much worse than, say, a stranger. Another factor might be that the rapes or the torture continue through different growth stages. For example, from childhood into pre-adolescence. And also that the severity of the torture is included, meaning that a slap is not nearly as strong a betrayal as a rape.
Great. So your next question is, why are people afraid of it? Why be afraid?
Well, how did you survive? How did you get through it? I mean, that's it. What saved you?
One of the few times that my mother took me to church at age 5, I gave my life to Christ. And now, reflecting back, I believe that from Scripture, in Psalm 91, God says that he will command his angels to guard over us during the terror of the night. And as you may know, the brain of the child is developing, and when it has extreme neglect or extreme abuse, it literally withers. And it looks on an MRI like a dead tree branch. But my grandmother was giving me piano lessons.
The MRI?
And it's like you got a true spiritual hit, and that sustained you, kept you alive, that let you deal with that so you could get out of there.
Yes, the core personality did not experience the rapes. You know, the core personality, Casey, was being comforted by the angel that rocked me.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, and what happened with me is that the church was part of the betrayal. So I anchored with a different spiritual basis. And so I separated Jesus from the church. My church was part of the betrayal.
Wow.
That makes sense?
Yes. I'm so sorry you went through that.
But I still didn't lose God. Even with all that, I didn't lose God. I didn't lose separate my church. That's where a lot of the predators were in the church. So anyway, tell us, we're going to stick with your story, but this is fascinating. So go ahead. Where were you? I'm sorry I interrupted.
Well, I think I was discussing the fact that my grandmother gave me piano lessons, and she read scripture to me. She also taught me vocabulary words, and she was constantly reading to me. And the brain, every time you hear Mozart or Beethoven, a new brain wire is created, meaning that a portion of the tree branch becomes alive. And they've actually done studies. Go ahead.
So she was the one that was she loving towards you? She loved you? Feel
she was loving towards me, but she wasn't physically affectionate. I think that, you know, that was the time in our society when people didn't touch or they didn't openly show affection.
But she paid attention to you and taught you music, taught you the piano, and there was something about Mozart and Beethoven.
Okay. That's the way she loved her, yeah. So that let you love yourself. That was wonderful. She saved your life, yeah.
But you're saying that,
yes,
that music created a MRI tree or something.
Sure.
Yes, it. You know, when when areas of the brain die, for instance, when somebody is blind from birth, then the other areas of the brain become more enhanced with more blood and more cell tissue, and so that it the brain compensates. And I think that that's what probably happened to my brain. Even though there are proven areas of the brain which will remain damaged, for instance, the hippocampus and the amygdala, which both of these are involved in memories and the emotion around memories. Even though those are damaged in abused children, the rest of my brain probably overcompensated so that I am very high functioning.
That makes total sense, in absolute sense. It was like the wounding allowed you to develop spiritually and to, you know, I can tell by your writing that you've been able to center yourself, to look at yourself objectively, and then you're no longer a multiple because you're a person that can synergize. You're very wonderful that you're knowing what you've got.
Well, I'm not sure I caught all of that, but I do know that I am literally a walking miracle. And when you look at the number of multiples in the United States, they believe that there is one multiple for every 10,000 people, which means that there might be 32,000 multiples in the United States. But half, at least half, are psychotic and in mental hospitals. There are two other multiples in Clovis, New Mexico, where I presently live. And the population of Clovis is about 35,000. So that makes sense that there would be three of us. The other two are both psychotic. So the fact that I am not psychotic is, it's amazing to me. It shocks me. And, of course, I've paid a very high price in the level of therapy that I've had to deal with, in the amount of processing, in the amount of time that I have lost, and the fact that I've lost my job, my pension, you know, all of these factors are very destructive to the personalities.
Great. So is this, does this open you up to demonic possession? Some people think that when there's a multiple, they have demons. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, there's actually no reference in Scripture that I have ever found or read about where demonic possession in the Bible was related to a multiple personality. And, of course, people can maybe appear to be demonic because many multiples have at least one altar that is filled with rage. And that altar or other altars can also be very, very, very angry at God. But with demonic possession, you talk therapy, which can be very healing for many multiples, would not work. So we really can't assume that a multiple is demonic for those reasons. Because with a demonic possession, it would take supernatural intervention to rid the body of those demonic spirits.
So there is, in your cosmology, there is such a thing as demonic possession, but multiples are just not being possessed by a demon.
You know, a true multiple, yes, a true multiple has a long history of severe torture and abuse in childhood. And many of the demonic possessions that I have either read about or learned of rarely have this severe level of abuse.
Great. And so some people may have, they dissociate during abuse, but it's duration, the length, and the amount of abuse that you've undergone that has disorder, MPD. So,
well, I didn't catch all of that question.
Okay, that's okay. We'll go to the next thing. So what happened? Why are these children not being protected? What was going on that no one noticed what was going on with you, that you weren't?
Well, now, in my 50s and 60s, some of my relatives have said to me that they knew something was wrong, but they didn't know what it was. And I grew up in the 50s and 60s, and at that time in our society, people were not required to inform the police or any protective service of a potential child abuse situation. So I was self-mutilating in 7th grade and 8th grade and 9th grade. But I'm guessing that my teachers simply didn't understand what was happening.
Great. They weren't trained in those days. But now I hear all the time that they're the other way around, that if a parent does even the slightest thing, their children are being taken away.
So no one intervened to try to help you? No one even... they chose to act or say anything in your presence to try to protect you. Am I hearing you right?
That is correct. No one did.
Oh, my God.
I had several broken bones. The doctors said nothing about it. It was always blamed on the fact that I was growing up on a ranch. And ranch kids have broken bones all the time.
Wow. So how did you... do your healing. How did you heal such your abuse? Tell us about your healing journey.
Well, as you mentioned, on February 19th of 1990, my father passed away. And I flew into Lubbock and went to the hospital, Lubbock, Texas. And within about 3 hours of his death, I was suicidal. And I really couldn't understand why I was suicidal. I knew that I loved my father dearly, but the depression lingered and lingered, and I never got better. I just became more and more and more depressed. And finally, I decided to enter therapy. That was a major decision because I had been brought up in a family that felt that therapy was for weak people. And when you're a rancher's daughter or a rancher, you consider yourself anything but weak. So I was really to the point where I had about 3 more days to live. And I called the therapist in Denver, Colorado, where I was living. And I asked for an appointment. And she said she had one the following week. And I said, no, that'll be too late. I'm killing myself in 3 days. If I can't get in to see you, then I won't even try because I'll be dead.
Great. Wow. So what happened then?
So she made me sign a contract that I would not kill myself. But actually, I told her that I couldn't sign it because I needed that option. The pain of having the memories was so intense. Death would have been a major relief to living with the pain. But I didn't kill myself, and I spent almost 9 years in therapy. My therapist used EMDR, which is rapid eye movement, and we accessed hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of memories of rape.
That's amazing. So that was very effective for you, the EMDR. I've tried EMDR, and it wasn't effective for me. It was for you. So tell us a little bit more about your healing path.
Well, I think that my brain was like a pressure cooker, and it was ready to burst. So she could have probably used another technique, and it would have worked for me. One of the interesting things that I think happened during my therapy at one point, probably in about 1996, my electrical appliances, if I touched them, they would break. I broke or destroyed batteries, even my car's electrical system, my vacuum cleaner, my stereo, everything that I touched sort of, I probably short-circuited. And the reason I believe is that when the brain is in such a hyper state, it emits like electrical impulses or pulses. And I literally fried everything around me.
Wow. Oh, that's amazing. So you were frying all your clients. So how did you get past all this? I mean, you're amazing right now. You're helping to keep getting the book. And so how did you get, like, past all this? How did you deal with your anger, your
I think you asked me how did I deal with my anger. Truly,
right.
I believe that writing a book is such an intense effort. It took me 2.5 years. And literally, I would wake up in the middle of the night screaming, and I would find myself on the floor banging my head on the wall or actually on the carpet. You relive the event so intensely. And in the writing of it, by the time I had, 30 or 40 revisions of one paragraph, the words went from being intensely emotional and disturbing to me to being just words. So in a sense, the writing released my anger.
Yes, and I find that to be very effective for me as well. I have a journal I write every day, and I invite my conscious to be prepared to reveal my conscious mind what's going on. Effective. So your writing helps you heal.
I believe it was just as effective as my 9 years of therapy. Yes, I do. And I would highly recommend it for everyone. I don't think that a journal would have worked for me. To have written it down once really would have just simply stimulated my anger. What I really feel is that the numerous revisions helped slowly release the pressure of the anger.
I misunderstood earlier your allusion to the transfer in the or the relationship that you had with the therapist, and I couldn't quite get what you were trying to tell us about that.
I think Casey was saying that the doctor was her husband. Do you want to tell us a little bit about this con man husband that you had that you thought was a doctor?
Yes.
Or an imposter,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I was no longer able to work as a flight attendant. Even when I left therapy, I still had ongoing issues with panic attacks. I had difficulty with authority figures. It was very difficult for me to work around men. And so I did leave United Airlines. I moved to Santa Fe, New Mexico, and I worked at my church part-time. And approximately 5 or 6 years after I'd left United Airlines, I met in Clovis, New Mexico, a gentleman by the name of Jeffrey Bell, whom I believed was a doctor. He told me he was a leading expert in pulmonology. He really was not, but I didn't discover that until months after we were married. Jeffrey Bell is still pretending to be in the medical community. He presently lives in California. But during my marriage, I found a credit card bill that was over its limit, and it had a name on it of a woman. And the woman's, I found her phone number in Jeff's address book. So I picked up the phone and called her asking why did my husband have her Visa bill, her credit card bill. And during the discussion, we put two and two together that Jeff had stolen her credit cards. he had run them up to over $9,500. And the credit card companies were coming after her. It made me very concerned, of course, because Jeff had been flying all over the country using my credit cards to speak at medical conferences and also to lobby in Washington, D.C. He had run my cards up to $35,000, telling me that we were going to get paid for these conferences. And, of course, I never saw a penny of that payment, if indeed the conferences did pay. I did divorce Jeff. I kicked him out and divorced him within 3 days. And then I began finding warrants for his arrest on the Internet. I found one that was active because many of these warrants were, you know, 8 or 9 years old, and they had been dismissed because the police could not find him. I called I called the Oklahoma hotline, where I found an active warrant, and an investigator with the DA's office in Oklahoma City called me back, and they said yes, they had been after Jeff for about 9 years. It was a small warrant, meaning it was a small bogus check to Sears. But Jeff had made them so angry, he would call up the sheriff in the DA's office and laugh, saying, "You'll never catch me." So anyway, I worked with the Oklahoma and the Santa Fe police, and Jeff came back to Santa Fe, and he was arrested December 31st of 2007.
So he finally got arrested.
Yes, he did.
You learned to balance trust and caution.
That was probably correct. Thank you, Dr. Sasha. That's a wonderful analogy.
Was Jeff a psychopath?
Jeff has been impersonating a doctor since the early 80s. That is according to the assistant DA in Oklahoma City. She found a charge against him for impersonating a doctor dating back to, I believe, 1982. He also had 40-some-odd bogus checks in that county alone. He had at least 8 wives and, I believe, 10 or 12 children, and only one of them is has he paid child support on. He makes
he's
his living...
Menace.
Yes, he's a menace to society. He has no conscience. He does not care if he leaves you in ruins. He does not care if he lies to you. And by the way, he was in church 3 times a week and prayed at every meal.
So he's a true psychopath. Can you tell our listeners about psychopaths and why there are so many psychopaths in the U.S.?
Yes. The true psychopath has, pardon me, has absolutely no conscience. They are grandiose. They lack any empathy. They have zero remorse. They're deceitful and manipulative, and they have very few long-term friendships. Presently, in this country, 1 out of 10 American males is deemed a psychopath, and 1 out of 25 females. There has been almost an explosion of them, and it comes through the mother's genes, or it is caused by a brain injury. And what happens to the brain of the psychopath is that they develop lesions inside of their brain, and they have almost zero activity in the frontal orbital cortex, which is right behind the eyes. So really, they are not capable of... Yes. They are not capable of feeling anything for another person. What they feel is the excitement of conning their target, or killing, or maiming. So Jeff is probably at the low end of psychopaths. So these are the people that con you out of every dime you've ever earned and walk away whistling. And at the other end of the continuum is the serial killer that doesn't care if he kills a 5-year-old child or rapes or maims an 88-year-old woman.
So there's something going on in our society, especially our American culture, of course this is probably a global phenomenon, something here that is creating more psychopaths than before, or maybe we're just aware of the psychopaths because of greater communication and information exchange.
Well, from the research and what the experts believe is that our society does not hold them accountable. So let me kind of backtrack. So there's 1 in 10 American males in the United States. But if you look at Asian countries, it's 1 in 140 is a psychopath. And the reason may be that in the Asian societies, group mentality, what is good for the culture, what is good for the group, is good for the individual. And they shun people who are selfish and who are too individualistic. So it's very difficult for the psychopath to survive in an Asian society. Versus in America, we applaud the risk taker. We applaud the person that puts himself first. And we actually almost applaud the lying and deceitful manner in which they gain their wealth or their notoriety.
Yeah, we always like the bad boy. You know, James Dean came in as a popular character in the 50s. You know, the bad boy. And so it kind of has become a model, an archetype that people at some level want to emulate all through the generations. So now, we encourage people to be individuals, but they become so individual, separate.
I think it's also difficult for our parents in this country to hold the child accountable and to make them at least act as if they have more ethics and more proper behavior in our society, because when the child turns on the TV or the radio or looks at who's becoming famous and who's getting all the attention on TV, they see extremely selfish behavior, such as the crude sexual videos that are being put out of young women, such as Paris Hilton. You know, she's getting the 15 minutes of fame.
Yeah, good analysis. You're right on.
You know, Casey, what we're going to have to do here is, I think what I'd like to do is to call this show short, because I'm not sure what we're recording, but I want to invite you back, and it won't be till March, on with Judy Byington. I recommend it to you. This is so important, and I know the other platform I have how about you tell us a little bit about your book, and then we're almost done anyway. And I did get a.
Yes, I'd love to tell a little more about my book. Thank you. It's called "And the Angel Rocked Me." It's on Amazon.com. And the price is $17.99, but they often have it on sale on Amazon.com. So I would love for your listeners to look me up and buy my book and give me a great review. That would make me very happy. So again, the name is "And the Angel Rocked Me."
By Casey Jones. I was looking at your reviews, and you've got, I think it's like 20 or so, 5 stars and just 1 or 2 fours. It's a I'm anxious to read it myself. I have to order a copy. But I want to thank you, Casey, for coming on today, and thank you, Dr. Lesson, for joining me as my co-host today. And this is such an important shooting. You are willing to consider counting.
Well, thank you very much, Janet. I really, really appreciate you having me on, and I would love to be back again in March with Judy Byington. Thanks again. I'm going to say goodbye and hope to hear from you again. Thanks. Bye.